Welcome to the Vortex Nation podcast, brought to you by lovers of hunting, shooting, public lands, the Second Amendment, and good food. What's up, everybody? We've got Jimmy and Mark on the mic here, as usual. You're always hearing us here. And then we've got Ruben across the table in real life in front of us. But in, I guess, what do we call that now? Not real life or virtual. Also across the table, though, we have Mike and Lan from Dissident Arms, which is really exciting because you guys know what that means. Actually, you already know what we're going to talk about because you clicked on the title. And it probably said something about AKs. And I'm very personally excited about this. In fact, I had somebody that I did not know come up to me, somehow recognize me from the podcast. So, Mark, again, we do have at least one listener out there.
He knew about you.
Right. And the first
he knew
thing,
you.
The first thing he said, actually, I'll just shout out. Hey, how's it going? The first thing he said, you're the guy who likes the Russian guns, right?
Yeah.
And I was very pleased to hear that that's how I'm identified.
That's flattering.
That's your thing now.
Yeah, it is.
Big Russian guy.
So anyways, but I won't actually claim to be a pro on anything when it comes to AKs. That's why we've brought in you guys, Mike and Lan. You guys are the real pros. You guys are doing all sorts of awesome things with the AK platform. And so we want to just pick your brains about it. But first off, for our listeners out there, if you guys can just introduce yourselves, tell us a little bit about what you do, and also why you do it. Why AKs? Why are they the cool thing to do? And what is alphabetical order? I think that would make Mike go first. You want to go first then?
Yeah, hey guys, I'm Mike Whiteside, Dissident Arms, half of the team and half of the business here. But the original passion for AKs kind of just started with the platform itself, and then the but our angle as a company to help, you know, put ourselves on the, you know, on stage, essentially in the industry and so forth, has been the competition angle. And that's been mainly due to the magazine box fed shotguns from Russia that we are highly passionate about. And we built a lot of our business around. And so as much as we love AKs, the majority of our business, is, especially on the custom side, has been related to the Sega shotgun, and then even more heavily on the Vepr based shotgun. And mm-hmm. then there's some American offerings now that are starting to transpire. But competition, you know, our slogan for a company is we know competition. We've taken what was a relegated platform that people a lot of discounted and actually brought it up into being basically being a world champion platform, and also just dominating across the multi-gun community with just tons of our customers, our friends, our sponsor shooters, and we shoot a lot ourselves. And so so as much as it's about the AK for us, it's truly competition is the angle, and the AK is our vehicle getting there.
Heck yeah. Lan, how about you? Lan? What got you into this?
To be honest with you, I kind of got my first AK experience basically through Mike. I mean, because he... You know, he really, really liked the shotguns, getting into competition and getting it started in general. And so that was my first introduction to them. And then ever since then, I mean, you know, we've seen the potential in them. And then we've also seen the innovation, especially with IWI and what they've done with the Galils and stuff like that. And so we're all about speed and we're all about competition. And so, you know, we want to take this platform and show what it can do.
Right on.
We're on the non-traditional side of the AK community. We'll roll it up in a little package for you.
Yeah. Yeah, if anybody out there hasn't checked these guys out yet, if you go and you're doing a quick scramble to Google some of their firearms, I think that you're going to find that when you do see them, they're not what you would ordinarily associate with a traditional AK. I mean, we actually have a couple here on the table that I brought in, my personal guns. You know, usually you're used to seeing a chipped up, beat up looking wood stock. The metal finish is all beat up and it's just some stamped receiver sort of thing. But you guys have, I mean, they're full-blown race guns. Like, everything is touched. Everything is custom on them. They got sweet paint jobs going. And to your point, I think a lot of what people see, too, is the 12-gauge thing. I think we'll get into that, hopefully, because not many people, maybe up until perhaps relatively recently, because of, I think, a lot of the stuff you guys were doing, even knew that a 12-gauge AK was a thing. But AKs are one of the things I find particularly interesting about them is the fact that their history and also where they come from varies so much. You can find AKs that come from as far, west, if you will, in this case, as Egypt.
How about every other country that doesn't have an AR-15 does AKs?
I mean, yeah, you're right, And I'm even, by relegating that to Egypt, I was probably even cutting it short a little bit. But I know some of the really prominent ones that I've looked at, you've got your Egyptian AKs, you've got everything, you know, in the Eastern European countries, you've obviously got Russia, you've got Chinese AKs, they're coming from everywhere. And each one has its own little unique spin on it, you know. Each one has kind of maybe its own little cult following, if you will. And it's really fun, I think, to follow along and see what each, you know, what individual country was doing to what little AK or whatever. But I don't know, can you guys speak to that? Are you guys dealing primarily with just the straight-up Russian ones, or do you kind of have appreciation and use for all the different AKs?
No, that's a great question. I mean, as you said, AKs come from pretty much every corner of the planet, and they're always differ in configuration and quality. And the toughest thing here in the United States has been the access to all these different platforms. And then, if we've ever received them, they've pre-banned. That was the heyday, so to speak. Those are the ones that everybody wants, and a lot of people's opinions on the AK has been and want for particular platforms has been based upon pre-ban models, and then now what we've had up until recently is all basically a post-ban community, where it's just where we've had to deal with parts kits being imported. So these are demilled; they're not the full original gun. They're missing the barrels quite often, obviously missing the receivers. Hopefully, it's a matching kit and so forth. And so a lot of the opinions have been built upon either stuff that was imported a very long time ago that's now become very expensive, or it's been built upon the ability to get particular parts kits. And then, depending on who the builder was, their ability or their want to build them in the correct way. And so a lot of the people's opinions on the AK have been based upon not their true form, or they've been brought in neutered sporter forms. And it's been a very much changing market over the last couple of decades. For us, for Lan and I, we're post-ban. Most of our collection has been the newer Russian imports that were available up until the Obama administration's State Department ban on Russian firearms, which actually has nothing to do with not Russian firearms, but Russian companies doing business in the United States. And that happened to wrap up a few firearms manufacturers. And so the supply of AKs internationally is restricted at different levels throughout the last few decades, to where now what we talk about is that we're actually in what we feel is the AK renaissance here in the United States, meaning that U.S. manufacturers are taking it upon themselves to become familiar with the platform, have to deal with some of the manufacturing
nuances
and difficulties that in the United States we're so CNC based, and as where, internationally they're have a lot of forgings and things like that are not quite online here. And so to be completely honest, it's a very dynamic, changing AK market that's happened over the last few decades to where we are now, which is basically very few imports coming in. And now we're looking more internal, I think, for our long-term AK support.
Okay.
What about those pre-ban AKs, like, makes them, I guess, attractive to some folks? And like, what's different between those ones and the post?
Mainly it was that they were brought in without being demilled, so they didn't have all the rivets drilled out of them or the receivers cut a lot, and they were basically able to be imported in more or less the configuration that they were manufactured in. So the foot soldier, or the potential if they were sold to their domestic market, that AK came in to the United States in the same form, as opposed to being like, this is a whole boatload of Polish guns that are now decommissioned, either because of the fall of the Soviet Union or a particular police force isn't using them anymore. And then now they have all the rivets drilled out of them and their break is broke down into their individual pieces, which allows them to be imported into the United States. For the most part, just to kind of make it simple, is that you can't bring in the receiver, typically the barrel, fire control group, and magazines are difficult unless it's for repair purposes only.
So, to be honest,
anything post-ban that's built on a U.S. receiver is really not traditional as much as people want it to be.
Okay.
It's the best that we can do with what we have following the laws that we're governed by.
Man, they really are. They're so much like the Mosin of semi-auto firearms because, you know, I mean, I remember a time back not that long ago. It's not that I'm even hearkening back to this super olden day, but I remember when you go online and you could find a Romanian Wasser for maybe $300.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, ARs were going for $1,200. And it was kind of like, man. And that was always the reputation that I think AKs got, is that they were just these borderline trash guns. And everybody said they're really not worth a whole lot because they can't shoot a group worth a darn. They're not very accurate. The only thing that they really have going for them is just that they won't ever stop.
Yeah, they're reliable. Yeah.
Yeah. And is that reputation? I guess both of those things. I feel like the reliability aspect is pretty well proven, but is the whole, it's not that accurate, it's just made out of a bunch of crappy stamped parts, the only reason it works so much is because the tolerances are just so ungodly sloppy. Is that well-deserved, or is that, it depends on which region of the world it comes from? How does that play out?
I mean, for a battle-type rifle, I mean, I think it's accurate enough. And a lot of the times the inaccurate reviews would be mostly due to the inaccuracy of the people shooting the gun.
Over the wall isn't accurate?
It's always the arrow, right? It's always the arrow. It's never the... So
yeah, there's a ton of factors involved, but to be completely honest, is that a lot of stuff that was sent to the United States that may not be like their very best. And then also if they were built by a particular gunsmith over here, what is their ability to build a decent rifle? And then if you were to take the actual barrel and the cartridge, let's just say we're talking about 7.62x39, you took the barrel itself and you tested just the accuracy of the barrel and the cartridge, it's not going to be quite where we are with the 223 and the 5.56. But then that's when the Russians came out with the 5.45, is to combat some of the accuracy issues, the weight of the bullet and so forth. Yeah. And then to be completely honest, the majority of AKs have not a great optic mounting system.
Right.
They do not have good triggers. They do not have good stocks and cheek wells. So now when you take in the slightly not as accurate cartridge, you take in a not so good trigger, certainly not match grade. You take in the very high mounted optic off the side of a stamped receiver, as opposed to it being solidly mounted to the barrel itself or something that's very true to the gun. When you take all those factors in, that's where the perceived inaccuracy has come. And that gives it a reputation. And it's not completely undeserved, in my opinion. It's because that bringing all these things together, and Ruben knows the competition shooter, it's highly important that you're able to see your optic, that you're able to feel your trigger, and that all these things play into one another, as where the AR, which is what most people are going to compare it to, the U.S. battle rifle and the the international battle rifle, so to speak, is that they are, in my opinion, it has to do with a lot of the configuration of the particular firearm, not its ability to achieve the same accuracy.
Okay. Now, leaving just 12 gauge aside for just the time being, because I do want to get back to that, what's your favorite cartridge to fire out of the AK platform? If you're building a center fire rifle to shoot, 7.62x39, there's the 5.45 that you bring up, which is an interesting one. I know, I'd be curious because I haven't looked into the AK. I think they called those the 74s if they were firing that round. I haven't looked into those in such a long time, but I do remember people saying that ammo was darn near impossible to find for so long because it was all Russian stuff. Or do you like the converted stuff where you've got 5.56 AKs now? And I've got this Vepr here is actually chambered in the old American 308. What's your guys' favorite? Yeah.
So if you, I enjoy the 7.62x39 as a thumper. But if I'm going to, you know, if I want something to carry lighter ammunition, to be more accurate, the 5.45, I mean, is a really nice soft shooting gun. And so, you know, a tuned up 5.45 is extremely flat and very low recoil, and they're pretty darn accurate. It's not still ballistically a little bit off from what a 223 is, but again, like you alluded to, there are AKs and the American calibers were non-traditionalists. You know, my favorite AK stamp rifle has been a 5.56 arsenal that we built up. We call our defector, which is basically we've taken all of the problems that we talked about a minute ago: trigger, optic mounting, stocks, basically the ergonomics of the gun. Taken a better cartridge, and then already, which is a great barrel, which is a hammer forged barrel from Bulgaria. So there's nothing wrong with the barrel itself. Yep. And so now this is I don't want to go sub MOA, but just with the normal setup, it's an MOA gun, you know. Now that is with the 223, but at the same time, that can be right there on par with the 5.45, and then you're going to pull back a little bit on the 7.62x39. But I will say that 7.62x39 in full auto is one of the best rides that you'll take.
Okay. Noted.
Yeah.
You got to try that sometime. Is there American made 5.45 these days, or are you still using the Russian stuff, and is it hard to find and expensive now? What's the status on that?
So there is American made 5.45, and we just happen to have a Galil.
Look
Ace
at that thing.
And 5.45 right here. And so, so this was a limited run done by IWI USA, and they committed to doing a run of their Galils in 5.45, and they were very well received by the community. They were a limited run to begin with. Hopefully, they'll take it up as a full SKU. There are some Palmetto State has one now. PSA has one, and they're 74. Okay. And you know, I've heard about a few others potentially coming down. So it's definitely not a dead caliber here in the United States.
That's good.
Hornady manufactured as well.
Did Hornady's got some ammo? And then I believe that you know, there's been a lot of movement in the industry this last year with Remington moving out and some acquisitions and so forth. And we heard about some potential 5.45 being manufactured domestically also.
That's so cool. That's pretty exciting.
You cannot get the steel core from Russia anymore. That was actually banned by, I believe, the Obama administration. I think I'm saying that correctly.
Right. Lan, are you pretty much on board with the same, like, as far as favorite caliber to shoot out of the AK platform?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite AK is my competition AK, and it's 5.56. And so, okay. You know, we brought those out, the defector, like Mike said, and ever since I had that rifle, I mean, that's been my favorite AK.
The defector.
It's got a hell of a name.
It does.
It's sweet.
It's perfect.
Yeah, I think Josh Frelick shot one of those for a couple of years, right? Like at the Red October matches.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's a sweet setup.
Over 2 years in a row and shot a defector in 5.56 and, you know, won the overall both years. So, yeah, open. Yeah.
Yep. Right on. You brought up a Galil there. There's one sitting behind you with a UH-1 on top that's real pretty. And then you brought up that other one, the little shorty Galil Ace there. What's the whole, Rube, you've been getting into the Galil thing too. You got yourself one. What's the deal with those? Because everybody, they always get lumped in with AKs. And when I look at them, I haven't done enough research on them myself. But I can see the resemblance, but it's not full on AK. What is it and why is it so special?
I mean, if you look at an old Corvette, right? It's still a Corvette. If you look at a 2021 Corvette, it looks totally different.
Way different.
It's just modernized and brought up to the time, right?
It all makes sense now.
So that's what a Galil is.
There's your car reference.
You're definitely speaking in terms Jim will understand.
AKs and cars.
Yeah.
So the Galil is the Israeli's rendition of the AK, essentially. And so it was already back to the, I guess it was the 60s, I think. Mm-hmm. But it's already with the modernization of the AK, the original Galil. And then there's a Galil Micro. There's several different forms of it. They've, from Israel, have made it around the world in different countries. They've seen different, you know, you know, seen in different wars and so forth. And so the it's a milled AK, so it's milled from a solid block of steel, and as opposed to a stamped AK. And then Israelis are well known for their, you know, ability to produce high quality firearms. And that's, there's no doubt that the Galil, in my opinion, especially if you're talking milled, is at the top of the heap in the AK community. Some people,
that's a good way to say it. It's at the top of the heap because you're talking about AKs.
Absolutely, is an AK. It's an AK action. This thing right here takes an AK trigger, and it is an AK action. Absolutely. So,
wow. Okay.
Many of our customers don't own any AKs at all, so they don't have a preconceived notion on what they should own and so forth. So they're wanting something nice, and they're also potentially wanting continuity of caliber. So that's the reason why the Galil does have basically each of the calibers available, and so it makes it a good platform for somebody to get into that doesn't think that they need to conform to a certain spec.
Sure.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago we were getting ready to go out to Red October in St. George, and in the last couple weeks leading up to the match, I had a lot of phone calls with Mike and Lan about triggers and what we could get to work in the Ace, and it actually performed super well, like unbelievably well. And when you compare it to a lot of like your traditional like U.S. competition rifles, you know, really like kind of a standard here for multi-gun, it would be like an AR platform. It's pretty hard to argue that the AR shoots any softer than a Galil. I think they are as soft and just a little bit slower of a recoil impulse that gives you kind of the perception that the gun doesn't move as much.
Yeah.
They are really fantastic.
So you shoot an AR all the time.
Yeah.
Now you have this Galil that you shoot a lot as well. You've shot it in competition.
Yep.
Now, does it, if somebody's trying to choose, does it come down to just pick whatever one you think is cooler, or are there definitive advantages and disadvantages to each?
Yeah, you know, there's a few accessories. I'll let these guys speak to it too. There's a few accessories that you may want to run, or like, you know, maybe performance parts, kind of like, you know, maybe a reason why someone would pick to upgrade one car over the other just due to like aftermarket parts support or something like that. But, you know, most of the matches that we shoot, you wouldn't be hindered if you were to, you know, to take a Galil, a modern Galil like these guys build to a three gun match or something like that, you know, especially due to the kind of the percentage of long range targets to near targets, you know, even though the accuracy might not be at that same level, just kind of, I think a lot of it's due to just the scope mounting platform is still not quite as solid as you might see in an AR platform, but you know, it's not going to be the reason why you don't beat the top guy. For sure.
Okay.
If you're at a match like 300 yards and in, I'd run a Galil all day.
Yeah. It really comes down to, it's meant to, there's really not a great place to mount the optic without having to do some type of modification. Now the Galil Ace and the newest version of it is pretty darn solid, but even its setup is not what it is as far as the optic mounting is on an AR. That's the biggest concession in my opinion versus the two platforms.
Yep.
Now I will have to say that I've never taken an AK that I've known to be a good rifle that was reliable and ever had a malfunction with it. I mean, it's just, I have not ever, which I can't say that for an AR. And that to me is the biggest difference in that is that the tolerances that it's built at, and then the simplicity of the system, and then it being a piston driven gun, just makes it highly, highly reliable without any attention to it at all. I always joke around and say, if it can survive Africa, it can survive anything, and the AK can survive Africa. So,
I mean, that's a pretty good point.
They do that in overland vehicle testing, right? If it can survive Africa.
Yeah, you just send it to Africa. Exactly.
Yeah.
First things first.
I mean, there's a lot to be said for that, though. I mean, that's a huge deal. Like, knowing and having that peace of mind and confidence that it's always going to go bang no matter what, like,
yeah, the fact that they just work is very confidence inspiring. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool. So you guys obviously you've alluded to the fact, and again, if anybody's done a little Google foo here while they're listening, you can figure out already. It's no surprise that these guys do a lot of modifications to these systems. how does one go about beginning to modify an AK? And especially when you guys got started too. I mean, now, Ruben, you're talking about aftermarket support and where you could find parts, and you guys were talking about how there's a lot of finicky, new to us things with the AK platform that are different than firearms we're used to. How did you guys even start, like, when it came to putting in new triggers? And I mean, you guys have full forends, you guys have muzzle brakes you're putting on them, different everything. I mean, were you guys just starting completely from scratch?
So where it really started was wanting, really seeing three gun on TV and then getting into three gun, just to speed forward. And the open division is what I was drawn to and wanted to shoot. And open division shotguns were very limited in the variety that you could choose from. And the AK platform seemed to be the most viable, but yet it was also the one that everybody said was the most unreliable. And, you know, I'd actually bought a very expensive shotgun from another builder at the time. And I'd already owned one of the first imports of the Vepr 12 shotgun.
Yep.
That wasn't modified in any way. And I bought a highly modified Sega. And, you know, it just didn't run so good and had some issues with it. And so fast forward, I wanted to figure out why this system was failing. And I tried a really long Benelli out. I tried an imported Turkish shotgun, tried some of the other varieties of open division, potentially open division shotguns. And it kept coming back to the Russian platforms being most viable, but having a lack of aftermarket support. And then, to be completely honest, just, you know, some self-anointed, you know, experts in the industry wanted to work on the 12 gauge platform. And it's completely different from the rifles.
Okay.
Just because you can build a parts kit on a rifle and you can put three rounds down range and you say that the gun's reliable, that's not the case with the shotguns.
Well, rifles overgas naturally. Yeah. So it's always, you know, pretty much going to work all the time.
Yeah. The 12 gauge cartridge is never meant to be stacked on its side like it is, especially in very large magazines. And so the difficulty was really not that the Sega's unreliable or the Vepr's unreliable, or that even the aftermarket parts not being there. It's mainly was related to the fact that stacking cartridges, 12 gauge cartridges on their sides above 10 rounds is an inherently unreliable thing already. And so what had to happen was that you had to, you know, to be completely honest, you had to care enough to spend enough time to figure out why it doesn't work, and then be willing to invest the time and the money to get there. And that's kind of, we chipped away at that as we were really early on as an individual shooter, and then early on as Dissonant Arms as a company, making that what we focused on, was figuring out, basically yelling at the gun saying, why won't you work? And then figuring out how to make it work. And that's pretty much was where things started with our company.
You guys too, I mean, I think it's important to know that, like, if we were to look at the competitive shooting scene here in the U.S., it's not, you know, around the world, this platform is being used really effectively, right, in competition. It's like what we have as an AR here, a lot of other countries have the AK platform, from whether it be PCCs or shotguns or rifles. Like, if you go on the world scene, the AK is a very, very popular platform.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember going into the shop, you know, late at night and hearing Russian voices, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? And Mike's just watching videos of these IPSC shooters over there in Russia.
Mike's in, like, trouble.
There's no subtitles. He doesn't understand a word of what's going on, but he's just watching these guys and he goes, I know these shotguns will run.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he dedicated the time to them, and I saw the passion behind it. And I was like, that, you know, it's a sweet ass gun. And so once we got, you know, got fully behind it, I mean,
So the AK in Russia is more developed than it is here, meaning that there's models that exist that never made it to the United States. And so,
yeah.
Also IPSC, which is what their competition is, only runs 10 round magazines. So the stress on the system, the stress on the cartridge is significantly less. So essentially the benchmark that has to be met for reliability on a 10 round magazine is, let's just say it's half what it is on a 20 round magazine. Okay. And so, so that's been the big difficulty in the fact that the shotgun is not what a rifle is. It actually has a different style gas system. And then the going over 10 rounds with the cartridge was a mountain that we had to climb and we had to figure out through a lot of trial and error. And is that, so American 3-gun, no one cares about 10 round magazines. Let's just start there. 12 round magazine is considered standard capacity. When somebody receives one of our guns, they don't even look at the 12 round mag. They go straight to the 20 round magazine. So you've got to be able to cycle light powered ammunition in a 20 round magazine as fast as you can pull the trigger. And that's, you know, it, honestly, it's not an easy thing to achieve. And, but the platform itself is extremely durable. It's a light recoiling system already, meaning the cycling of the action in all AKs, even rifles, the action stops at your wrist. And so you manage a lot of recoil with the 90 degree here in your wrist. And so the action stops here. So it doesn't cycle past here and dip down like an AR does.
Oh, way into your shoulder.
Yeah, that's the reason PCCs within the AR form want to sit down in the back, is because they got that heavy carrier coming back past your wrist and then sitting down, which is where a PCC AK stops right here. And they're just, it's just inherently a lighter system the way it's designed. And then also the cartridge on an AR sits entirely in front of the carrier and the bolt, which is where in an AK, it's got a very long rod that sits over the front of the cartridge. And as it cycles back, it would have to lift that rod up. And so that weight, maybe let's say like 1/3 of the weight of the carrier and the bolt are essentially are ahead of the cartridge, as opposed to being all behind the cartridge. So it's just, and it's meant to be extremely durable, a lot of forged parts and so forth. So Josh Frelich shot, you know, 110,000 rounds through a single serial number in about 11 months. And so that just proved without a doubt the durability of the platform. And that's, you know, on it, to be completely honest, it's one of the reasons why we just went full bore on the platform itself.
Hell yeah.
You'll have to excuse me. I thought you said 110,000 there.
So let's just say Josh is very methodical on the way he does things, the way he cleans guns and the way he practices and the number of rounds he shoots. And early on, he wanted to do what it took to become a world champion. And he did that through lots of practice, lots of rounds, lots of personal sacrifice. And you know, we really appreciate that too.
Heck yeah. Man, I love all the stuff you went into though there, because a lot of it is just things that everybody takes for granted, right? I mean, everybody goes out and they just, rifles or shotguns, I can imagine. You go out and you buy a magazine, you're like, ah, it's a magazine, holds ammo, whatever, I'll stick in the gun, it'll work. You don't even think about how the magazine can inherently affect reliability. I mean, I never would have known that actually it's more stressful to have one of these larger magazines. I just figured, what difference does it make? Just a bigger magazine with more rounds in it.
Yeah, I get a different spring.
Or you know, like just how the weight is distributed amongst the firing system there. I mean, that's all really intriguing stuff. And I can see then why, you know, that passion that is there. Also, I can relate to it as well, because for no particular reason, I just love AKs. So I can relate. But
it's the sexy girl across the room. I'm just telling you, it is.
It is. So... what is it though about, you know, when I see your guys' competition guns and you see the magazine sticking out of that thing, now we are talking about 12 gauge here shotguns. You see the magazine sticking out of that thing. It's enormous. Huge box mag. I mean, it's beyond banana mag levels. So why is it that larger magazine holding more rounds can affect the gun that it's going into? How is it the spring that's necessary to be used in there is like somehow too much for the firing system to work with it? Is it just the,
well, there's all sorts of things. So like the magazine itself with that much weight, it actually starts pitching and it could cause shell presentation issues. Yeah. And then with the length of the spring and the spring pressure itself, you don't have your system or your action tuned properly, it causes excessive drag on the bottom of the bolt. And so 10 round mags, like Mike was saying, 12 round mags, those don't cause those issues. You can hammer those away all day. But once you want to start putting lighter ammunition, longer magazines, all that, all those things together, they just don't work with factory out of the box guns.
Yeah. So like shotguns are their own little animal. They're like in between a rifle and a pistol as far as gas and pressures. And then so it's not inherently going to be like, there's so much gas here, there's a surplus, let's tame it down by, you know, using an adjustable gas block or whatever it is. If that's not the case with the shotguns, is that you have to capture as much of the gas as possible. Of course, without overgassing and without fouling your gun out after 2 or 3 mags, you have to capture all of that gas and then get that into the carrier and then get it to cycle like something that's got way more drag on it, especially with a large capacity 12 gauge magazine. You got a plastic hull sitting on the bottom of it, rubbing the carrier, as opposed to, you know, steel or brass or, you know, the copper jacket. And so then, you know, like, for instance, just as an example, we've sent guns, you know, around the world to literally every continent besides Africa. I mean, besides Antarctica, they actually have some in South Africa, but the they only shoot 10 round magazines. So we have supreme confidence in the ability of the gun to be highly reliable on 10 round magazines, even with international ammunition. Now, you put our US 20 round magazines which is all that US three gunners care about, or they want even larger, is that with international ammunition in their country would not work out as well as we want it to. It's just the cartridge, you know, as you were saying. So I think with any gun, the linchpin starts with the cartridge, then you move into the magazine. The gun is actually the lagging factor on any system, in my opinion. It's the one that everybody has to conform the gun conforms around, the magazine conforms around the cartridge. Right? I've seen platforms die because their magazines aren't available, or if the cartridge goes away, now it's an antique, a relic of the past. You know what I mean? And so the 12 gauge is here to stay. And you know, it would be impossible to redesign it on in a cost-effective way and get it distributed. So we had to say, well, where are the limits of the gun? What's the limits of the cartridge? And, you know, and this is all being done in a post-production modification setting, as opposed to this, we designed this gun from the ground up with what we know now, you know, which is something that could be in our future. But the Vepr platform, and then also the Sega platform, are, in our opinion, lend themselves to the difficulties that there are with the cartridge. So, yeah. So yeah, 20 round magazines, just so you know, are just making that work, especially with light ammunition, shooting as fast as you can is completely different mountain to climb than just building a reliable AK rifle. I mean, quality is a concern with how well the AK rifles are built, but reliability is actually not even something they ever consider once it goes bang 3 times, which is where with the shotgun, it's highly dependent upon lots of different things. The other thing is the cartridge, once it's spent and it has to get out of the gun, a 12 gauge spent hole has no mass to it at all. And so getting out of the gun without touching anything on the way out is very, very important. Is where a piece of brass or steel in an AK most of the time, you know, it usually ends up in the next bay. You know what I mean? So, there's so many things to consider on the shotgun that aren't concerns with the rifle.
Yeah, man, hearing you talk about that, I mean, they are just such different animals. And I will say about that 20-round mag, now, I don't own one, and I haven't shot one. But when I see that, I'm like, I want that.
Mark, it would work great. You guys want it in those hunting seasons where you can, you know, go full-on mag,
I'm taking my Vepr Snow Goose hunting point.
Yeah, new Snow Goose gun. There we go.
There you go. I brought it back to hunting for you.
I had a question for the guys. So one of the things you mentioned earlier was some of the U.S. made options. What are you guys seeing like as some of the things that are being made here in the States that you're starting to play with?
Yes. So there's a company in Florida called Kalashnikov USA, and they bought are basically a new name for a company that's been around for a while, and a couple acquisitions that I'm not 100% familiar with, but they are building quality product out of Florida. They chose to basically build analogs of Kalashnikov Concerns firearms. So they have a 12 gauge shotgun that's it's a rock and lock style magazine like the older Segas. Doesn't have straight insert magazines like the Vepr does. And then they also have an analog of the Sega 9mm, which is a really nice PCC that we're doing custom versions on. And then also the
103. Yep.
Yeah, an AK-103 analog that they're working on right now. So they're basically picking one platform at a time, and building U.S. versions of traditional Russian rifles. And then I've heard of some other guys working behind the scenes on AK-based 12 gauges. But right now we are working with Kalashnikov USA. We take their KS-12. And we add a Vepr Magwell system to the gun, and add our chokes and stocks and handguards, and we build them up into a reliable version of our gun on a Sega analog, essentially. So the guns themselves are U.S. Built, which is quite nice if you're ever wanting to speak to agencies and police force. That lots of different people are considering box shotguns.
Right.
Where in the past it was completely, almost blasphemy to even bring it up. So
yeah.
So it's definitely a changing market right now as far as the AK. It's basically becoming a U.S. market, as where before it was an import market. It's just the easiest way to kind of sum it up.
That's cool.
Are there some performance advantages to the AK style shotgun that you're just not going to get with a different platform?
So guys that consistently outrun other platforms without bringing in other platforms into it. The guys that consistently can outrun those cannot outrun the our shotgun. They just can't outrun it. It can't be outrun by a human. So I'm wanting Jerry to try. Maybe Ruben can set it up. But
we'll give it a shot.
Yeah, put it up to the test of Jerry's finger.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we've seen them run 10 splits, and I mean, maybe even faster. So it's crazy.
Yeah, and with a properly set up gun, you can't outrun it. It's also the way an AK shotgun is there's a puck that's actually the piston that's up in the gas block, which is where on a rifle there's no puck there at all. The piston is actually the end of the uprod itself.
Yeah,
and so the gas is contained in the gas block by a very small round disc that we call a puck, and it actually acts as the piston, and so that design is the big diversion, the large diversion from a traditional rifle as far as the gas system is concerned. That is an extremely reliable way of building the system, in my opinion. And it also lends itself, with properly done, of course, lends itself to being able to shoot a ton of rounds without fouling out quickly, which is where other box guns have tried to take what are traditionally tube style gas systems and then bring them into a gun with a pistol grip and a magazine on it, which is not, so it's really a tube gun underneath, but it has a box on the bottom and a pistol grip, which is where the AK-based shotguns, the Vepr and the Sega, are essentially AK rifles that were changed from being a long stroke system into a short stroke system.
So I'm a big fan of the stuff from IWI that I've had played with some of their platforms. I'm a big fan of the KUSA stuff. Now, one of the things that I always saw, because I've always tried to get people to play in the AK world, and I think it's just a fun gun platform. Jim, you're the same way. They're a ton of fun. One of the things that in the past there was a detractor to people maybe was just that aftermarket support there were some inconsistencies just due to manufacturing processes from imported guns, and the stuff that's made here in the U.S. or brought into a company like IWI that has a strong U.S. presence. Are you seeing there's a lot more, is there more consistency so that maybe someone who's a tinkerer, somebody who likes messing with ARs and putting aftermarket stuff on them, could that start to become a reality now with more of a U.S. AK market?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so much aftermarket support for AKs now. It's incredible. I mean, you have, companies like RS Regulate making real quality optic mounts and handguards. Companies like KNS Precision, I hear out of Texas, they're doing some awesome stuff with gas piston work. And then also some other innovative things like for the Khalils, the plastic delete kits.
Yeah. And then suppressor companies understanding that, guys with AKs want to suppress them also. So they have traditional style clones of a PBS-1 suppressor. And then they also have new mounting muzzle devices that are meant specifically to go on AK thread pitches. Ones with, gas block probably, you know, issues with the gas block being all the way against the muzzle device when you tighten it down. And there's no mil spec for anybody to deal with. And so you have to, all aftermarket manufacturers have to understand if they want the, if they want to see the numbers in their product, they have to understand that their product either has to fit a variety of platforms or they have to come out with individual SKUs for individual platforms. And so I do feel like eventually, as it becomes more and more of a US US supply chain, as far as the actual rifles are concerned, that there will become some sort of more standard, which is where, unfortunately, that's one of the things that we have to deal with whenever we sell parts. So we pretty much every part that we use on a gun is for sale on our website. So whatever we build with, we offer to others. A lot of them are just plug and play, meaning like, you know, it's a side mount for an optic or so. Other ones need fitting. Well, fitting means in the gun world, I mean, in my opinion, that means gunsmith. You know what I mean? It doesn't mean, here you go, I'm going to, I know your ability as an individual to fit this part to the gun, and I'm going to warranty your ability. So we butt heads a little bit with some of our customers sometimes with saying, well, how does it fit? Or I put this thumb mag release on my gun, now my mags fall out of the gun. Well, you didn't fit it properly. Well, how do you fit it? Well, I can't explain to you that over the phone, sir. I'm sorry. You're supposed to hire a gunsmith to do so. So it's difficulty. It's difficult in if you want to have a variety of parts fit all the platforms, or you're going to come up with a individual SKU for each platform that's meant to just be plug and play. So it's a major difficulty in the AK market, but there are quality companies spending time and effort to battle that and to make things available. So it's still a very, you know, emerging market here in the United States. So yeah. I think that as more companies spend time, effort, R&D money in that space, that we're only going to see a more developed platform, more developed, you know, platform and aftermarket support. So,
If a person has a Dremel, they ought to be okay, though, right, Jim?
Well, you just described me, because I remember about 4 years ago, or maybe even five, when I first got this Vepr here. And as you can see, if you're watching on YouTube right now, I sort of turned this into a bit of an SVD clone-ish kind of thing. It's obviously not anything like a real SVD, but...
You know who could make it into a real SVD?
I do. Anyway, I got this stock for it, I recall, and when the stock showed up, I waited forever for it. I paid a decent amount of money for it, because this is what I wanted. And then it showed up, and I'm like, man, I'm ready to get this thing mounted up. And there were no holes for anything in it. And I called up the company, and I said, I think you guys made a mistake. There's no holes for me to mount this to my gun. And they said... It's an AK. You have to make the holes. And so there I was, like, I don't remember what I was, like 20 years old at the time, barely had any experience with anything. But I did have a drill and some screws, and I drilled into my brand new stock, and I kind of figured it out. And
wood screws.
It's still together in one piece. But
and you are too, and that's the important thing.
Yeah, exactly. Same with my VZ over here. I remember there's some goofiness because I have not a real VZ 58 or whatever 8. I have the VZ 2008, which was like a parts bin special, and there were certain parts that you could get that did fit and many that didn't fit, and I had a doozy of a time trying to this whole thing. This optic mount here that this UH1 is on. Do you remember when Aaron Huff down in machining was like trying to customize that?
I remember the first optic mount that snapped off while you were shooting it.
It did snap off. There was that. But then this one was an interesting story because this one mounts onto the gun.
And it's like your top cover too.
It's your top cover too. And Aaron had to help it out in our machining, in our machine shop, because it didn't fit right at first. So he had to machine it down until it fit right. And like the bolt wouldn't really go back well because it was still like rubbing on something. And he's like, well, technically I've got it down to the point where like you can kind of run the bolt and then force it forward with your hand. And I was like, don't worry about machining anymore. I'll just shoot it a couple of times and the force of it will eventually just wear away whatever metal needs to get worn away. Yeah. And so I proceeded to shoot like, I think it took 10 rounds, and then whatever metal needed to get filed down.
Yeah, you just throw a little flitz on it, and you're good.
Yeah, and it was great. Now it shoots lights out.
It's like a custom mold.
Iron sharpens iron.
I laughed. I fire formed
your receiver.
we always go, if it doesn't fit, you just get a bigger hammer.
Okay? Yeah, so, that's right. Yeah. That's the beauty pretty of AKs, though. They just, you kind of got to like make them work. That's how they're, that was their history, though. Everything
like
was
Mark
just
says,
make
it did work. You try forcing it?
Step one,
force it.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, there's definitely some times over the last several years, you know, as we're learning certain things and so forth, to where you had to understand that you that these guns are completely different than your normal armor setting. A set of punches and a little hammer and a block are not going to get you very far. You got to be prepared to properly set up what you're doing. If you're going to, you know, everything on it is complete setup, or you have to be prepared basically to swing harder than you ever thought you would swing at a gun before, to get certain things to happen. And obviously you can't damage the gun when you're doing that. So there's a particular way of doing it. It's not about just beating it to death, but I mean, just some, we have tens that are pressed in on the recoil assembly that we replace recoil assemblies with. Well, many of our customers will break 10 punches, break a finger trying to get one pen out, and then they'll send it to us just to remove one pen from a recoil assembly. And now we understand how to set it up and do it, but it's the guns are not easy sometimes. They're put together with 50-ton presses, and you know the operator has no idea how much resistance there is, so they just push it in. Again, it's meant to survive Africa. It's meant to survive military contracts around the world.
Siberia.
And then each one is a bit different. So aftermarket fitment is important. I mean, really anything that's going to last on an AK that wasn't specifically designed for that one platform or a analog of that platform should be fit to the gun. Meaning it's not going to go on nice and easy and loose. You know, you may have to, again, hit it harder than you would think you would hit, but with the right kind of stuff, then you could do it without damaging the part, without damaging the gun. And then you end up with a handguard that never gets loose. You end up with parts that don't get loose and so forth. And so
I don't know a lot about making scopes, but I don't think that that's what they can do with optics.
Yeah. Well, and just like you have to, it makes it such that you have to really actually know how it works.
Yeah.
You can't, I mean, you could train a monkey to put an AR together. It's just, it's the same process over and over. You don't have to know how it works or why it works. It's just this goes here, that goes there, tighten this down, and it's done. But, I mean, with these things, it's just you actually have to understand how it works. You're also mentioning loose handguards, and I'm going over here and finding that my Jimmy Gunsmith foreign over here is just a bit wobbly. Do you think with the viability of the AK 12 gauge platform, especially like you guys are doing, now you're mentioning that there's a lot of American manufacturers getting into them and getting into the rifles as well. Do you foresee that now that we're catching up on the whole AK thing? I'm not going to even ask the question like, is the AK going to replace the AR-15? Because I think that's probably just not, I don't know. I don't think that's probably going to happen. But I mean, if more departments and things like that are starting to pick up the shotgun, is there a place for them to be like, well, maybe we do get, you know, an AK rifle? Because it seems like, I mean, all of your manual of arms or coat of arms or whatever, it would just with how it works, how it points and feels and functions. I mean, it'd be nice to have it be the same as your shotgun.
Yeah, I mean, I heard the manual of arms, and that's the biggest hang up as far as like any type of departments or, you know, it being accepted, where people buy cases and cases of them or buy contracts of them. Now the individual end user is they can be essentially sold on the difference in manual of arms. The Galil ACE rifles are, you know, with the way their safeties are and stuff, aren't a huge diversion. But the AK safeties when we've shown the gun to people, the AK safety has always been the biggest hang up of the entire gun itself. And so now that depending on where manufacturers go with certain avenues that can be done on the AK in the future, things like cross bolt safeties, potentially an AR style safety could be adapted, but the receiver is very wide for an AR style safety.
Okay.
So as far as replacing the AR-15, not a chance in the world. But What manufacturers here in the United States will tell you is that if they could sell one AK for every five AR-15s, they would be extremely happy. And so, so I think that that's definitely possible. You know, my Russian friends and contacts, all they want is what we have, which we have ARs, and they want AR parts. I want what they have. And
classic.
So it's a grass is always greener on the other side. Kind of, I think that's part of the dynamic. But, and then a lot of guys, their safe is full with AR-15s, right? It's full with different versions of it, you know?
I think with the emergence of more domestic AK aftermarket support,
yeah,
and even the domestically produced AK variants and AK rifles, then that's going to give somebody, you know, a new point to upgrade and play with.
Correct.
All sorts of stuff.
Correct. Yeah. And that's what happens is that, you know, not everybody shoots as much as a competition shooter does. So a lot of their love for the platform or love for love for guns is that acquiring a new gun, maybe customizing it, and then taking that whole ride, you know what I mean? Putting the optics on it. You know, potentially taking it hunting, which, you know, we've had our customers, you know, hunt bears with our guns before. We've had them do hunt geese before. We've had them do all kinds of different things before that would traditionally never be thought of this particular platform. Now, is it the very best one for it? Maybe, maybe not. But at the same time, it's definitely possible. And then I just see that a lot of people already have a lot of ARs, and the AK is something that they don't have. And then that everybody's going to eventually want one. Most of our customers, even though it's a shotgun, usually it's their first AK action at all. So we're explaining to them certain things. And that's an introduction for them. And then now, usually 6 months later, they're like, hey, I need an AK rifle or whatever it is. And so, or an AK PCC or whatever. And so for the US manufacturers, they want more guns sold. The parts kit thing is over with. I'm not saying there's not going to be more of them, but we've already seen 2-3 waves of parts kits since post-ban or since the ban, and they're not there anymore. I mean, the Soviet Union fell a very long time ago, and so there's only so much surplus that can be brought into the United States, and then there's only so many countries friendly with the United States that produce new AKs in high enough volume to actually bring into the United States. And then we also have our lovely importation laws that most manufacturers abroad don't care about making versions that fit the AK or the US market. So like, for instance, they're selling their entire production to people that aren't picky, so to speak, is where our laws make the guns we have to be picky on the guns because of our laws.
Yeah. Why make them, they don't want to go through all kinds of new tooling and figuring it's not worth it for them.
Yeah. And then sometimes, you know, on importation, they could sit for years or months, and it could be you could have a lot of money tied up for a very long time. So, you know, the manufacturers that are smart have a U.S. presence. The ones that are already completely U.S. based are now, some of them are bringing AKs online. They've gone through a couple of generations and learning curves. And so now they're, I think the long side of the market is going to be the U.S. manufactured AK with the guy that owns a bunch of ARs that now wants an AK. I think that's where the numbers are at.
Heck yeah.
I think Mark, that is a good hypothesis.
You guys might not be aware of this. Mark, it took him a while to get an AR-15, and then in one foul swoop, he got three. And then now I think the next thing to do, Mark, is you're the guy with a lot of ARs, and you're sitting there looking at them thinking, do I need another AR or do I need an AK?
Mark's thinking, I've had these for 3 months. It's time to get into something new.
They seem so basic now.
That's what happens. But AKs, those are the answer. I'll tell you what's the answer. Is one of those AK PCCs. Those things are sick.
They're the John.
Stupid
reliable. Stupid reliable.
They're stupid reliable. You start walking around with an AK PCC, you look like you belong. You're somebody. You look like you belong in a movie like Drago, but instead of boxing, he's got an AK PCC and he's going around. Now, granted, of course, he loses, but still, it doesn't matter.
Not if he had an AK PCC.
Yeah, but if he went up against Rocky Balboa?
Then he still loses.
He still loses.
Right. Okay.
But it's okay because he looked cool doing it.
Right.
And it was stupid.
They are
reliable.
Pretty sweet. They're pretty amazing.
They are.
They're cool.
Well, and I think too, like the, you know, right now at least in the competitive shooting scene, Mike and Lane, you guys can speak to this a lot better than I can, but I think that the AK 12 gauge, and you know, whether it be in, you know, a US made platform or a Vepr platform, is kind of the king right now, right?
I mean, the last match we were at, 13 of the top 15 were AK shotguns. So
wow.
one third
that'll do.
Yeah, the most open shooters I've, well, I don't, it's the first time that I've ever seen as many open shooters at, on a national stage as there were TAC Ops shooters. So there was 104 open shooters and 106 TAC Ops shooters.
Wow.
And then they had some two gun divisions and some other divisions and so forth. But that's the first time that I've seen them essentially equal as far as the number of competitors. Yeah. And then in the open division, one third of the field shot dissident arm shotgun, which are all AK based shotgun.
Doing something
that's
right.
I was gonna say, that's heck a testimonial.
Yeah.
And so we have to, we also love competing. I mean, building guns is highly important to us. It's allowed us to be successful, you know, as individuals, as a company. But for me, man, I love shooting guns. I love competing. I don't just hang them on a wall and look at them and so forth. Like, I'll shoot your most commemorative anything, because it should be shot before you're gone, put it that way. And so, the competition, is what's important for us. And so having a reliable shotgun in that realm, in that sector, it's definitely an AK shotgun at this point in time. Now, will there be a diversion from a true AK action in the future to other things? You know, who knows, whenever bigger companies, more R&D is done, who knows exactly where the box fed gun's headed, but AKs in general are definitely emerging in the United States. It's just something that's going to happen, and it's going to be gain more and more traction. Now, as far as spreading those across competition, across other divisions, I think it lends itself best in the shotgun and very much in the PCC. Yep. The rifle, I think that there'll be more difficulty pushing the AR off as king on rifle, you know, in competition, just because of, there's lots of different factors, but the PCCs are generally shot out to a maximum of 100, sometimes 200 yards at special matches. Shotguns are generally 50 yards to 100 yard slugs. I have shot 200 yard slugs on the clock at Fort Benning before and hit the target with an AK based shotgun. So, I mean, so there's no limit. They're the limiting factors as far as performance on shotguns, performance on the range. It lent itself to climbing to the top. PCCs, I think, will have a tougher time, but will still, the cartridge and the platform and its ability to take up space in the competition realm, I think are definitely viable. The rifle is going to be the toughest one, but I think that, you know, competition is the smallest section of the market, but it's very visible. But the rifle's got lots of upside, just in the fact that Americans love guns and not enough Americans own AKs, and I think that will continue to change.
So. Yeah. And I mean, you have talked to there a lot about competition, but I think we've all pretty well established at this point. I feel like the fact that the whole competition versus, you know, duty gun or whatever, home defense gun or something, some other kind of gun, the line isn't really as definite as people thought it was. I mean, you know, if a gun performs like you're describing it does in competition, like if it's shooting 110,000 rounds down the barrel reliably, or if it's, you know, getting beat up in Africa and still working, and then it comes over here and you take the same thing and just do a few modifications to it to handle better or something like that, or have a better trigger, it's going to be a reliable firearm for many other applications. So
not as many instructors nowadays say that'll get you killed in the streets.
Not as many.
They're a little more hesitant to say that because a lot of people have been proved wrong.
I want plus you're holding an AK. So
I'm going to go to a class here at Vortex. Yeah,
you gonna piss that person off, Mark?
Bring an AK. Just throw them off.
Four choices.
Let's do it.
We should take an edge class with AKs. AK class.
I can help with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
That sounds like a
great idea.
Let me, before we kind of wrap up here, and if you guys have any other questions, definitely throw them out. But I have one question for you guys, as just AK enthusiasts. So we kind of got the gist. I know you were talking about great places that the 12 gauge shotguns come out of. Let's say when it comes to the rifles again here, outside of Russia, what's your favorite? These are like pre-ban AKs. What's one that you would totally have? Is it like a Chinese, Egyptian? Is it? I don't think it's a Romanian. Maybe it is.
As far as the Norinco, yeah. As far as quality, Land said it is the so you have the early pre-ban Chinese AKs. So
yeah.
China can do very well what it wants to do well. It does very poor what it wants to do poor. And so
yes.
And so the AKs that they put out a pre-ban and that were imported to the United States were actually very high quality. And a lot of those are some of the most sought after. Just what's happened with the market in general is it's just the gun market has gone into another stratosphere over the last 13 months or so, something like that. And unfortunately, because of the potentiality of certain restrictions on the ability to own firearms and configurations, even these that were already considered expensive. So like a Polytech Legend is a milled AK from China that everybody would want to have in their collection. You know, it's very high quality milled AK.
Okay.
Just built very well. Now, it's a traditional woody AK. You know, are you going to be able to go and shoot sub MOA with it? Probably not. But at the same time, it's a very, very well built gun. When you talk about traditional AKs and so forth, but they've gone from being already expensive to being extremely expensive. And so people's ability as a regular guy to have an AK collection that's deep is becoming more and more difficult. And it's most of my collection and our company's collection we got into what were imported Russian firearms. So like my favorite are Russian guns for sure.
Sure.
My favorite is the, you know, the originals. And so, when you talk about Russia, there's two companies, excuse me, Kalashnikov Concern and then Molot. So you have the AK and the RPK. Molots are extremely well built, like your pepper there. And, but that's essentially is literally a Russian RPK with that chambered in 223 that made it to the United States. So it's,
that's pretty sick.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that gun's tripled or quadrupled in value from when it came in. Yeah.
Look at that thing. Oh, my gosh, it's gorgeous.
So we have one of each caliber. They're the Molot RPKs, and there was extremely limited import. This is a real deal, all Russian, top to bottom. There's no U.S. receiver, no U.S. Anything, because it was, well, let me put it this way. And U.S. handguards on it right now.
Yep.
For a 922. But that's essentially still a Russian fire control group, Russian receiver barrels, all that kind of stuff. So,
dude, that thing is beautiful. Gosh, they are so cool. I know. I remember, like, I would never sell my Vepr, but I do remember when everybody was panic buying a bunch of Russian stuff. I was like, man, I could sell this thing for like four times what I bought it for.
Yeah, the 5.56 Vepr's are like probably the smallest number imported, maybe.
Okay.
Out of the popular calibers, and they're essentially unobtainium now. So
right on.
Yeah. I mean, and we're only still in the Vepr market as far as shotguns are concerned, is because we made a heavy move on the guns early on, knowing that supply could be constricted and people weren't trying to buy the shotguns up like they were trying to buy rifles. And so we were able to position ourselves for long-term viability by moving hard on Vepr's. And then now we also have the KS-12, as a viable, extremely viable platform for us to, I don't want to say transition to, but to add as another SKU along the line of our flagship, which is the KL-12 Vepr base gun.
Yeah, that was a good move for sure. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Jim, awesome. I think you ought to send your Vepr down there to get a little love.
Do you think it needs love? I mean, what tipped you off? Was it the fact that I did? Oh, I forgot I Dremeled off the original sporterized muzzle cap. And then was it all the duct tape?
I was gonna say then you
no,
had to be
I
that,
mean it's
the duct
like
tape.
The
or is
it's
just
like
the stock that's a bit wobbly.
Things it needs a spa day, okay? It needs
yeah. Is it
it
still
needs a little manny and petty.
Is it still an AK if I send it off for a spa day?
I don't know. You ask those guys, they would know.
It is, because I'd call what they have behind them on the wall there an AK or multiple AKs, and they're all beautiful and
Mike was talking
and
about
I bet when you hold them they don't rattle around.
The heart of the AK is still there, Jim.
They can build a little rattle into it if you really feel bad. They'll leave a screw loose or two.
Yeah. Maybe we can just put an artificial rattle device somewhere underneath there. You can't see it.
It's a fishing lure in there.
Yeah, exactly. You guys need to come up with a really cool grip where if I try to shoot it over a barricade, just not with no look style, like I just a little bit more ergonomic grip on it.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
That's really actually the only way I shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just saw that in movies.
I've seen you.
I think we may have pinpointed your accuracy issue.
That could be.
Yeah.
Why are dang thing won't shoot MOA. Did you guys have anything else?
Not me.
No, I think Mike said it. Not enough Americans own AKs.
Yeah. And that's what the manufacturers want. I mean, if we want to see a long-term viable, if we want to see more aftermarket AK support, then there needs to be domestic AK rifles being built. It's the only way that companies are going to invest their time, money, and intellectual knowledge is to have enough numbers. It's just, we're a small company. We're wanting to become a larger company, but we work closely with different manufacturers and we know what they want, which is to sell more guns. They need to be able to produce more guns to ride the highs. And then they also got to be able to sustain the lows. So unfortunately it's extremely volatile, industry that we're in, but I think that if we keep plugging forward that we can, come out successful on the other side and have lots of AKs and lots of AK parts.
Well, what's cool too is there's more and more events for AK minded people, if you will. So we've started to work with a couple of other guys to have an event that brings together competition and just like kind of an overall AK community feel. And I think there's other people that are doing the same. And so with more events and more places for these kind of people to meet together and kind of share ideas and stuff, I think it's going to grow the market as well.
Heck yeah.
I think that I heard it. My last call is that AKs are now as Americans as American as apple pie and Chevy trucks.
There you go.
Oh my gosh.
I need one.
You just said it. That's pretty American. I mean, it pains me that you said Chevy.
I was going to say, I love apple pie.
Hey, it's in a song.
50% of the things that you said are good. And none of them were car related. Anyway.
I just quote songs. That's why I'm here.
That's all right. Well, you've done your job.
Don't shoot the messenger.
You fulfilled your obligation. Guys, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming on and joining us for this one and spreading some of your AK knowledge and expertise. I think if anybody's out there listening and you're like totally bit by the bug, definitely go check these guys out. You can find them on Instagram and website, all that stuff, Dissident Arms. And also, if you're an AK fan, comment below too. If you're watching on YouTube or listening, then go over and do it on Instagram at Vortex Nation Podcast. Comment and tell us you're an AK fan. If you're not, then don't comment because we don't want to hear from you. And then also,
don't start AK versus AR arguments.
If they're aspiring, that counts too. If you're, anyway.
Yeah, Mark was a big AR fan long before he owned one.
Yeah, now he's going to be an AK guy. Also, comment with your favorite, like where your dream AK would come from. Mine's the Egyptian Mahdi. That would be mine. I like that.
Right.
For no other reason, I think it looks cool. I've never shot.
No, I want a 60s Galil.
Okay.
For reals.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Yeah.
I'm going to go modern with the PCC.
Also a fantastic choice. All right.
I'm that person. I'm the person that's like doesn't have an attachment. So then.
That's all right.
Give me that new one.
Cool. Well, thanks again, everybody. We'll catch you on the next one. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
All right, that'll wrap it up for this episode of the Vortex Nation podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hit that subscribe button so you can always stay up to date on the latest happenings over here at the Vortex Nation podcast. Leave us a review or comment down below. We want to hear what you have to say about the show, maybe what you like, maybe what you didn't like, so that way we can make these podcasts as good as they can be. You can also follow us on Instagram at Vortex Nation Podcast. We'll be posting about each episode released, so that way you can go back, find these things, maybe grab a little nugget of information that you could take with you to the range, out in the field, or maybe to the kitchen if we're talking about some good food. So, again, everybody, thanks, and happy hunting and shooting. We appreciate it. Have a good one.